think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 223 of Low Limit Football on this 5th of November, 2018, on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we learn about a 14-year-old who has scored for a top team in a top league in South America, and we ask, what did you accomplish at 14 years old? We discuss rumblings of another big team chasing coaches, and you'll never guess who might be taking over at one of the big clubs in Europe. Lionel Messi set to return after being sidelined with a broken arm. Will it happen? We'll discuss the possibilities. MLS playoffs have begun, and we've already seen our share of upsets. We'll tell you all about it. And Santiago Solari has taken over at Real Madrid. How did he do in his first match? We're going to discuss this and much, much more with Marcus and the short passes, Emily Wilson, who will be joining us in about 20 minutes. But joining me right now is the best co-host in the business, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you tonight, brother?
Ah, what an honor. Well, I will ask you this, going back to what you said firstly at the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. What did you do at 14, Joe?
I was getting into dance clubs as an underage. You had to be 18 or older to party. The old slogan, 18 and older to party, 21 and older to drink. And yep. I was 14 and I was getting in. So just like you and I were just talking just before we hit the air, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So yep. Yeah, man. How about you? 14, you know?
I was in high school. Or actually, that's still the age I get confused by for the last 3 years.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, no, that's... but man, 14. Well, I mean, let me ask you this, Joe, on a personal level. Is that too early?
For success?
For playing? No, no, for playing in the first division.
You know, if you're talented enough,
because the one example, and sorry to interrupt, the one example is the Freddie Adu thing.
Of course, everyone looks back at that one. But so for me, if you're talented enough is one thing, and I don't know about this kid. I know you know his name. For me, it's about a size thing. Okay, so if you are big enough and you can physically manage against a 20, 21, 22, 26-year-old, right?
Yep.
Then it's okay. But that's the worry. It's not so much whether you have the foot skill or the passing ability or the shooting ability, because this kid, for all intents and purposes, might actually have that. And he scored on the weekend, right? But can you get – how hard is it for, or how easy is it for a defender to physically bump you off the ball? That's going to make a big difference, and it can frustrate you as a kid. And think about that. Your mentality at 14 years old, managing that type of pressure is much, much bigger than, let's say, even a 17, a 19-year-old, 22-year-old. So that would be my worry is the physicality and his ability to manage that. That would be my worry.
Yeah, just going back, the name is Fernando Ovalar. He was born on January 6, 2004. He's 14. This is his second game as a professional for Cerro Porteño. He made his professional debut just last week in a draw against Tres de Febrero. and he scored his first professional goal in the Super Clásico, no less, the biggest derby in Paraguay, against Club Olimpia, that ended in a 2-2 draw, and is not only the youngest player ever to play in the first division of Paraguay, but he's also the youngest player to score, and the second youngest player to ever score in a first division game in the world. And also, he's 5'8".
So there you go. So we're just talking about size, right? 5'8". Yep. I mean, he's got how many 14-year-olds you know that are 5'8"?
Not a lot.
You know,
mind you, he's still growing.
Exactly. He's got a couple more years. He's going to have a few more inches. This kid's probably going to end up being somewhere close to six feet. Refresh my memory. Messi 5'7", 5'6"?
Yeah, 5'7", 5'6". Yep, yeah. That's right. Ronaldo 6'1".
Yeah. So I mean, so size wise, that would be my point. So this kid, you know. That was one of the issues with Freddie Adu is, you know, obviously he had the center of gravity and the foot skills, but I think in the end it was too much pressure too soon. And we'll
he is the same size or was the same size.
Okay.
He's 5'8 at the moment. I don't know. I guess he was shorter back then. So yeah, you bring up a good point on the whole physicality kind of thing, but yeah, I mean, he's still growing. So no, but honestly, good for him. I'm happy to see him actually, you know, scoring, you know, obviously setting himself, but now, I mean, look, I guess now it's just taking it step by step, making it cool. Don't think yourself too ahead, because we saw the media talk about this, about, oh, he's this next big star. Like, you got to be kidding me. He's 14.
Right. Again, putting all the pressure on. So
no, absolutely not.
So before we hit the trivia, let's make sure we pay the bills and get our promo message from Onnit. And I'll give it to you, Rob.
Onnit is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, Onnit combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you're climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room or running a marathon, Onnit is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, Onnit refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, Onnit's diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting onnit.com and using the coupon code BEYOND.
Thank you, Rob. Let's get to it, man. We've got a pretty packed show tonight, and I know we've got Emily joining us in about 15 minutes. So I'm going to throw it over to you because it is your honor for trivia tonight, sir.
It is, and we'll be talking about the big game that's going to happen in South America. No, it wasn't the Central Olimpia game that happened over the weekend, but it's the one that's going to happen next weekend. We do have a Copa Libertadores final, Joe.
We do, and I think it's a good segue to just mention real quick that we are doing a special show. So we're not going to do a whole lot of Copa Lib talk tonight because we're doing a special show that's going to come out sometime this week with Mr. Pete Coates, who's going to be joining us to preview the Copa Lib and a Super Clásico, man. I mean, what more could you ask for, right?
Certainly the one thing I would hate to be is a Buenos Aires cop at the moment, given the the stress and the pout and everything that's going on. I mean, Joe, I don't know if you saw the news this morning about how two fans got in an argument, yes. And I believe the River fan burned down the Boca fan's house.
Yes, I did see that. There have already been deaths, I mean, which is insane, but yeah, that's bad.
that's really bad.
That's really bad. So go ahead, man. What's the trivia for tonight?
Yeah, so escaping all the violence that we're probably going to talk about in a few days. But the Boca River Plate final will be actually the third ever continental final of all the confederations around the world to have two teams contest for the major continental title from the same city. It's only happened two other times. I'll give you a hint in this sense. It's in Europe, so it is a Champions League final, and the game has happened twice.
Okay.
Can you name the two teams?
I've got it. So I'd like to say thank you, Rob, for giving me an easy one tonight. But this is a good question.
I couldn't find anything, man. I was like, what am I gonna do? I don't want to stump him too hard. He was like, you know what? I'll give him an easy one.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate the love, man.
And I didn't know this either, mind you. I was like looking it up. I was like, wow, is that really the only final?
Yeah, of two teams from the same city?
Two teams from the same city contesting a continental final around the world.
Mm-hmm. Which is amazing because you would think, And it's the same two teams. So it's an amazing, stat. And it's I don't know, dude. The answer to this question, do you think it's going to have as much venom as this one?
Probably not.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's get to opening thoughts, man. And tonight, you know, one thing I didn't even bring it up in the opening monologue is the huge, huge story that was published by Der Spiegel, the German news outlet, about football leagues coming out of FIFA and just some amazing, amazing stuff. This has been kind of snowballing over the past couple of days. Some of the big pieces of this, Rob, is the kind of the backdoor exploration of forming a European Super League. I did see a story come out today, and I got to read just a little bit of it about how a lot of this stuff is tied to Charlie Stilettano and Relevant Sports. Because you think about the Guinness Cup or the International Champions Cup that we have here in the United States in the summer, you see a lot of those teams coming over, and it's kind of a prelude to what a potential Super League would be. But, you know, some of the stuff that's come out of FIFA is really tied into Bayern Munich and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who was secretly searching or researching about how Bayern Munich could leave the Bundesliga to join a European Super League, what that would entail, the money involved. There's all kinds of stuff. There's that side of the leaks that we've seen come out this week. The other one, which I think is even bigger, Rob, and that is the quote-unquote preferential treatment that the Gulf states that own particular football clubs have gotten, you know, in terms of preferential treatment and really skirting past the financial fair play rules. Particular Man City and PSG have been given a lot of leeway and a lot of impunity for many years, it sounds like, and it's all at the hands of Gianni Infantino, the current FIFA president, where these things were done when he was still the secretary general and he hadn't taken over yet. And I know we talked about this a couple of years ago when Mike was on the show and the three of us were talking about this, that Infantino was kind of all the same guard again, right? I mean, we were hopeful, but at the same time, look at the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yep.
And this is just kind of proof positive this is. I mean, what's your reaction to all this crazy news?
For me, I think you would agree with me on this one, Joe. I don't think it comes as a surprise.
No.
I feel that we feel that you look at how this has been going on for years. You look at how teams have had new owners. Look at PSG with the Qataris, Man City with the Arabs, Monaco with their Russian billionaire, even Chelsea to an extent, many other clubs. What's that?
Roman Abramovich.
That's right, yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is something where I feel it's not a shock as, you know, once you hear about it, but then when you hear some stuff that, you know, something going on behind the scenes, you know, under the table, that kind of stuff, you know, you start to really worry about, you know, how much control these clubs have and how much too much control they can have as well. And clearly this is something, and you know, we don't want to say that political politics and sports should not mix, but they definitely mix, that's for sure. I mean, they certainly mix into everything. I mean, one of the recent headlines, I'm actually going to go back to, and I just saw this tweet a couple seconds ago, that the owner of AS Monaco allegedly attempted to hide injections into the club via a fictionist sponsorship contract and through a series of offshore accounts through the Hong Kong and through Hong Kong and the British Virgin Islands. I mean, what more can you say about that? I mean, and you know what's the bad part as well? I don't think this will change anything.
No.
I think, unfortunately, you know, what we see of these clubs and these, you know, these upper management figureheads have is too much power and the transparency that it needs, it won't do anything, unfortunately.
No.
I think it's just only factoring them more into their favor.
Well, I think you know, the fact that they've skipped punishment so many times, and we've seen FIFA come down soft on people like this, I think is the big part of the whole story, where, you know, they do this with impunity, right? And so they're going to get away with it. Now, unfortunately, for clubs to react in the appropriate manner, meaning that they've got to look at this and say, okay, we cannot do that. I think you have to ban these clubs. I think you literally have to take them and pull them right out of the Champions League right now. All the money, everything, and just go, yep, we're gone. That's it. Sorry. Thanks for playing. You know, and then maybe ban them for another year after that.
Right.
I think is probably the length that FIFA, or not FIFA, but UEFA would have to go through to really make a statement here, right? I mean, let me ask you this. Fines aren't going to do it, right, Rob?
No.
We're talking about a team, let's single out PSG, that spent 220 million euros on Neymar and then turn around the very next season spent another 168 million on Kylian Mbappe. It's, you know, the money's there. They're washed with money. So you're going to go and say, we're going to fine you 30 million euro, 50 million euro, 500 million euro? They're going to be like, yeah, okay, where do I write the check? You know, because that's the kind of money they have. So I don't think a fine is what you need. I think what you need to do is you need to ban the teams. And then when that happens, then the players say, whoa, I'm not in Champions League. I'm not playing. I mean, we've seen players come and go from teams because of their status in Champions League. So I think what they need to do is say, you know what? You guys are out for 2 years. We're pulling you now. You guys are done now. And we're going to ban you for another 2 years. And then I think that will be enough to raise a red flag for Bayern Munich, for Juventus, for Real Madrid and Barcelona to say, wow, we've really got to be cautious with how we spend this money and can't try to hide it in some kind of advertising contract or some kind of sponsorship program like these two teams did before us. Mm. You know, we'll have to see how UEFA handles it. Because really, this is...
And as well, I mean, no, but not even that, Joe. I think FIFA has to interfere. And even if so... You know, who's to say the government can't do anything?
Well, but governments usually don't get involved into this type of thing unless there's got to be some kind of criminal intent. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like PSG stole 100 million euro from the people. That's going to be that's where the government is going to say, hang on a second. And think about it, Rob. Part of the basis of this story was the government got involved, right? Nicolas Sarkozy is linked to this. Former French president is linked to the actual movement of this between PSG and even Man City and the Central Asian like Qatar and Saudi Arabia. No.
He helped influence the vote for the 2022 World Cup to go to Qatar.
Exactly. So you know you've got to look at that and say, here's a case of government getting involved. I don't think it will be that, you know, maybe there's something that can be done for Sarkozy, right? Because he did this while he was French president. So maybe the French government does something there, but it would only be to Sarkozy. They wouldn't do anything to PSG because PSG at this point is just the beneficiary, right? You know, maybe the government fines PSG because of using public money for something. That's a possibility if there's any indication of that. But I think this is going to be all on UEFA, Rob. And you look at the money that Manchester City has, especially with being, you know, in the EPL, being, you know, part of that and that kind of money that they come from. You look at PSG and how dominant they are in the French league and the money that they have coming in. I agree with your initial statement. Nothing's going to get done. And it's going to be either out of A, they can't find them enough, so they're going to say forget it, or B, out of fear of trying to find them, because maybe the stories of this Super League stuff actually comes to fruition at that point, because you think of Manchester City, you think of PSG, you think of the money involved there, they've got enough money to do that. You know, so that's the worry. You get together with them, you get together with Real Madrid brass, Manchester United, right? I mean, we're talking about teams that are washing money. Bayern Munich has already explored this. I mean, who's not to say that you have an AC Milan who's got some stability now with the dollar. You get Juventus, obviously the most successful club in Italy right now. You get the PSG, you get Bayern Munich. Dortmund, I think it might be a little bit too small, but here's a team, Wolfsburg, backed by Volkswagen, right? There's tons of money. RB Leipzig, all that Red Bull money, you know, they're not saying that they're going to be the teams, but they would be the teams that would be looked at by the Super League teams because of the money they have already in them. And then you could easily see this forcing the hand if you punish them too harshly, or what they would view as too harshly, you could see that becoming the catalyst for some type of Super League. But again, you know, it's tough to say that would happen, but that could certainly become a catalyst for it.
Definitely. Yeah. It will also involve a lot of lawsuits, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I don't think we're gonna see the end of that anytime soon. So what I'm gonna do now, Rob, is because I wanna get our guest in here, and she's gonna join us by phone, so we'll get her called up here and added to the call. And And then hopefully we'll be able to chat about this a little bit further. But we're actually going to turn our focus from this particular part of the conversation to something else that came out earlier today. And I'd warned her about it because it's something you and I saw. But joining us on the line now in Low Limit Football from Marca and from the Short Pass, Emily Wilson. Emily, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Doing good, good. Thank you for having me tonight.
No, great, great to have you. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit because I'd rather get away from the corruption of football that we see time and time again. And let's get into something that's a little more fun to talk about. The CIES Football Observatory, they kind of published these lists, and they're very scientific about it, published today the five most expensive center backs in the Big Five leagues from a transfer value perspective. And going from fifth to first, Aymeric Laporte, $80 million. Virgil van Dijk, same price, €80.2 million. Antonio Rudiger, $81.6 million. Davidson Sanchez, $97.2 million. And Samuel Umtiti, $99.2 million. Now, interesting to see that four of the five of these players on this list play in the EPL. But when Rob and I looked at this list, we thought to ourselves, wow, they're really missing some players, players that I would rather have over some of the players on this list. One of them, a player that's actually pretty hot right now and in the same category in terms of age, is Alessandro Romagnoli, who is over at AC Milan, who's scored a couple of goals in recent weeks, and the captain of their team now, the center back, probably wouldn't be the starting center back for Italy for the next 10 years. He's a guy that I would look at as a big piece. There's a few of them out there. So I'm going to throw it to you, and then I'm going to have Rob jump in whenever he can, because I'm interested to see if you agree with the list or if you think there are other players that should be on this list instead.
I mean, taking my initial look at the list, I immediately thought, yes, we're missing a couple big key players from the game. People or players like Giorgio Chiellini, Diego Godin, Sergio Ramos. But those players, in comparison to these ones, are a lot older. So right. I appreciated and I actually admired how CIES took the younger players and made them into their own kind of category, because that's who we have to look at the moment, the up-and-coming center backs who are trying to change things. Joe Gomez here, he's sixth on the list, and he's only 21 years old. So I think that's really, really important. Personally, I thought Rafael Varane could have been a little bit higher on the list. I agreed with Samuel Umtiti's placement, and also the likes of Virgil van Dijk. So the top four, I think, were placed really well. But overall, this is the new era, and really any one of these players can take this position and be as important as they are.
You know, Emily, obviously, you know, going back, that is going to be a huge debate going on, and I completely agree with you with the fact that, you know, those players are much more younger than, say, a Sergio Ramos or a Diego Godin or any of that. But actually, I want to go back to my next question and talk about the forwards, because there are a few names as well that stand out that, for me, I'm surprised that, you know, I think when you look at the best forwards in the world, I mean, there's like a few that obviously stand out and need to be on this list. But as it follows, the most expensive Big Five league forwards from a transfer value perspective from CIES is as follows. Number one, Kylian Mbappe. Number two, Harry Kane. Number three, Neymar Jr. Number four, Mohamed Salah. And number five, Philip Coutinho. I mean, obviously, we're missing two big names in there that are easily worth over 100 million euros in Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree with that list, or do you feel that there's still some players that definitely need to be on that list because of the importance that they give? Not even in the sense of age at this point.
Again, for the forwards, I think the list is pretty accurate. Kylian Mbappe has been superb, especially for his age, the way he's been playing for PSG, and then, of course, what he did in the World Cup has just been astonishing, and his form has been carrying out this season as well. And the same thing goes for Harry Kane. Neymar, of course, because he's being paired up with Kylian Mbappe, is going to be high up there as well. He's taking really a big leadership role in his team as well, so I think that would add to his amount there. Philip Coutinho, I think, is also an interesting position. He's one above Messi. Messi's sixth, and the Brazilian is fifth. But again, I think even in the absence of the Argentine, Coutinho has been able to really take Barca under his wing and act as though he needs to stand up and be their leader for the time being, since Messi was out with an injury. I think an important one that could be missing is Luis Suarez. Actually, he's been superb, especially in his recent form, and he seems to just never age. to be honest. He's been in impeccable form, especially with those last few games against, in the league. But really, I think the top five are exactly who they should be.
Yeah, no, it's funny you also mentioned Luis Suarez. I mean, Joe, he's not even in the top 10. I'm going to read off the remainder of the list. Obviously, we got Messi in sixth. We got Raheem Sterling in seventh, who's obviously having a wonderful season as well. Mm-hmm. Romelu Lukaku has been, you know, a bit hot and cold as well for Manchester United. Number nine, we have Antoine Griezmann. And at number 10, we have Paulo Dybala. I mean, certainly there's a few names that are missing from the top 10 forwards list from a transfer value perspective. I mean, what do you think about this, Joe?
Yeah, you know, looking at the list, the one name that really jumps out to me, well, there's a bunch of them actually, but you know, one guy that I'm always high on, I'm a big fan of his, is Edson Cavani, right? He's not on this list. Cristiano Ronaldo, not on this list, which is incredible. You know, I guess let me ask you a question, Rob. Mm-hmm. On this list, how many of the, if you were starting your team today, and Emily, I'm going to, you know, Rob, I'd like you to throw this to Emily as well. If you were sure. starting your team today, how many of these forwards would you take over Cristiano Ronaldo? I mean, I think Mbappe is probably one of them, but how many more would you take over Cristiano Ronaldo?
Oh, I mean, how many players do I have to choose?
Yeah, of the 10 that are on the list. So the 10 forwards that you gave, how many of those would you take before you took Cristiano Ronaldo?
Well, okay. I'll put it this way. I'll put Ronaldo on my team. Mm-hmm. I'll play him in the left, but I would, I mean, obviously I would put Messi in there, obviously. I mean, you can't compare those two
right.
with anyone else. And yeah, maybe I put Mbappe just because of his age and just because of the progression that he's been on so far. I mean, I feel like those are the two that really stand out. Neymar, you know, he is there just battling it out, but I still feel that I would definitely pick Ronaldo on my team before choosing Neymar. I mean, Emily, what are your thoughts? Do you feel the same, or do you feel that there's still some other players that you would choose before Ronaldo?
I think my opinion is the same as yours, Rob. Kylian Mbappe, just what he's done and really how fast he's doing it is really, really insane, especially for the league. Like, he's doing a lot in Champions League, in Ligue 1, and then, of course, the World Cup performance that he just had. Mm. It's just been simply impeccable. So at the time being, that would be the player that I would choose, one, to play alongside Ronaldo, and then maybe even to replace him.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. No, I mean, certainly, and obviously we'll actually go to my next question, and this one I'm actually going to ask you this, Joe, and because this has been a conversation that we've been having for quite some time is, you know, who's the best goalkeeper in the world? Well, at the moment, we won't say that they are the best goalkeepers in the world, but we do have a top 10 list of most expensive, or at least from a transfer market value, from the CIES. At the moment, number one is Ederson of Manchester City. Number two, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen of Barcelona. Number three, Alisson of Liverpool. Number four, Thibaut Courtois of Real Madrid. Number five is Kepa of Chelsea. Rounding up the top 10, we have Jordan Pickford in six, Gigi Donnarumma in seven, John Oblak at eight, Hugo Lloris at ninth, and Bernard Leno at 10. I mean, Joe, certainly a few names are missing, don't you think?
Well, yeah, definitely, but this list I think is a little closer to the mark, and I think we're arguing goalkeepers number, you know, 11, 12, and 13. I don't know that we're arguing the top 10 so much. Maybe the order could be changed. You know, Rob, I know for you, you are a big Ter Stegen fan, and you are also a very big Jan Oblak fan.
Absolutely.
I think in recent form, I would take Gigi Donnarumma off this list. Because I honestly think at this point, the old man in Gigi Buffon probably belongs ahead of him.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think he's still got it, unfortunately. Alisson is somebody that really impresses me. I don't know, Rob. I might go Ter Stegen 1. I might go Alisson 2. For Courtois, I just don't like the way he handled the whole Chelsea thing. To me, it leaves a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth. So, again, I always look at these lists saying to myself, if I'm going to start a team, and this is my first draft pick of the team, who am I taking in this position? And I don't know that I'm going to take Thibaut Courtois even fourth. I mean, David De Gea is not on this list, right?
No, yeah, and he's regarded as the best goalkeeper in the world by a lot of people.
And how many? Again, it's almost the same question that we just asked about the strikers, the forwards. How many of these names are you going to take over David De Gea? Because not many. I mean, I might take Ter Stegen. I would take Alisson. you know, I would probably take Oblak, but it would be close. But I think De Gea's in there at that point. I mean, you know, Emily, I want to throw this one over to you because it's an interesting part of the conversation. You're missing a huge name in David De Gea off this list. He's not even in the top 10. Where does he stand there for you?
Yeah, looking at this list, it's really extremely complicated. But I agree with your point that these 10 are the top 10. It's just the order, again, should be a little shifted. For me, Ter Stegen is number one, and then Jan Oblak. Like, prior to what happened in the Champions League, he had more clean sheets than he had conceded goals. And reading that stat, that's just phenomenal for a goalkeeper. I also think Donnarumma might be one that could be shifted more towards the bottom. You could slot in De Gea in his place if you opted to. I also appreciate Alisson and what he's been doing recently for Liverpool, and Kepa from Chelsea as well.
Definitely.
But I think the big thing here is, this is like, from all the goalkeepers that we have to choose from, this is a good top 10. It's just the order, again, should be adjusted.
You know, there is also one big name missing here, Emily, and Joe just mentioned to me right now, is Manuel Neuer. I mean, Manuel Neuer is considered one of the best goalkeepers in the world for quite some time, and he's not even in the top 10. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a case of age and definitely experience and the way perception has been given to these goalkeepers, but you definitely have a much more tighter debate in that sense of who should be the top five. And I think after that, it's really up in the air for that point. But having said that, let's go from a youngster in Real Madrid that is doing quite well so far. And, you know, obviously came into the first team, you know, had a lot of hype to his name, you know, coming from Brazil, 46 million euros. I'm talking about Vinicius Jr. You know, he came into the weekend, scored his first goal in Santi Solari's first game as manager of Real Madrid in a 2-0 victory over Real Valladolid. I mean, Emily, I'll jump in real quick. I mean, certainly this is an impressive result, not only for Santi Solari, but also for Vinicius Jr., because, you know, you see Real Madrid struggle for goals. I believe that Marcelo, out of all people, have scored all the last four goals of Real Madrid prior to this game. So, I mean, certainly to get a youngster, you know, like an 18-year-old that's fresh, that's raw, that's really looking to make a name for himself, something that maybe Benzema hasn't been doing for quite some time, Mariano, who, you know, a lot of people came in as the new number seven to replace Cristiano Ronaldo, isn't doing well. I mean, certainly this is a big step for Vinicius Jr. And you know, I'll ask you this, Emily. Is this the time that, you know, we're definitely going to see Vinicius Jr. play a key role in Santi Solari's team?
I definitely think it is. After watching the recent game, I mean, right from the beginning, Solari had a totally different Real Madrid on the pitch. They looked a lot hungrier. They wanted to attack. They wanted to find their goals, get out of this, like, the old system and just kind of change for the better, you could say. But, I mean, going into the second half, it was still 0-0. So the decision to, one, put on Vinicius Jr. was really, really good on Solari's part, in my opinion. And then Vinicius is just a player that is constantly hungry. For the first goal, whether his shot was going wide or not, whether it was a cross or not, he's still the one that's forcing to have the team continue attacking and continue attacking. And in the end, it worked. So I think just as a player, he's going to be extremely, extremely influential for the team, especially in the absence of Cristiano Ronaldo. I know sometimes that can be a big comparison for this young man to fill, but at the same time, he's showing potential and he can definitely make it. And we've seen so in this first game, and it should be exciting to see what the future has.
Emily, I just want to jump in here real quick, because this is something that Rob and I talked about even last week. Is Vinicius Jr., would you consider him a Galactico?
Oh, that's a hard one, Joe. I'd say at the time being, no. I think Galactico would still have to work and kind of prove themselves. Like, yes, Vinicius does really good with the Castilla team, but at the same time, he has to prove to, one, be a starting player. I think that's key. Once we get him into that groove and playing really well in the starting XI, that will change his attacking style, and then he could develop into something. But I do think the potential's there. It's not out of the question. It could definitely happen.
No, Joe, and obviously I'll go back to Vinicius. I mean, certainly we have seen some hot and cold performances from Karim Benzema. Obviously hasn't scored in the league since September, but has scored in certain cases in the Champions League and in the Copa del Rey. But, you know, given the fact that you look at a player like Vinicius Jr., you know, being, you know, hot, fresh, you know, having that hunger to score. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the youth as a major factor, him at 18, Benzema 31. I mean, if you're Santi Solario, I mean, and looking at the next few matches that Real Madrid have in the league, at the moment they have Celta, Eibar, Valencia, and Huesca within the next four games. I mean, would you be tempted to start Vinicius Jr. over Karim Benzema at this point to get him that experience? And just because of the fact that, you know, at the moment he's performing much more on form.
Yeah, definitely you want to look at that. And again, this is actually going to be part of a question I was going to ask Emily towards the end, is what is Solari trying to accomplish, right? If he's, if he's trying to keep the job at Real Madrid, if he's not just a caretaker, then I think sometimes you go with the reliable thing, and the reliable thing would be Karim Benzema, and the fact that he's been there, he's done it before, you know, he's succeeded. If you are a caretaker but you're gambling, then Vinicius Jr. is the easy choice at this point. You know, Benzema, for as poor of a form as he's on, has scored four goals so far for them in 11 matches played, where Vinicius Jr. has scored one goal in three matches. So the production is slightly better right now out of Karim Benzema if you extrapolate the numbers out. But at the same time, you've got that huge upside in Vinicius Jr. And Emily, like you had mentioned, he has the hunger, and he showed it this weekend. So I think from that standpoint, that would be kind of the hot hand, right? But I think if he was just a caretaker, he would probably be more inclined to play Vinicius Jr. But if he's looking to keep the job, he would probably stand to be a little more reliable and stick with Benzema. Emily, I want to throw that to you and get your thoughts on which way you would go with that. And then I'll come back to you because I do want to ask you a little more about Solari.
I think that Solari could continue to use Benzema in the starting XI. I mean, he is one of the captains. He's been there for a long time. He has the experience, and he also has the leadership to do so. Mm-hmm. Right from the beginning, he was the one, like you said, he has the four goals. Whether or not he's been in form recently is a different question. I still think he has the ability and should be able to be in the starting XI. But Vinicius should be a substitution that comes in a lot earlier in the game. If the game's not going well, you have to look at it from a different perspective. What's not working? What might work? And make that change. And I think that just has to be done prior to the 75th minute, prior to the 80th minute, in order to get an actual response from a hungry player like Vinicius.
I agree. Yeah, getting him in late is certainly not going to allow him to flex his muscle and really, really give you what his worth is. So I'm totally with you there. I want to close out with one more question, really, on Santiago Solari, because I want to look at, obviously, we're only one match in here, so this is very, very early in the process. But do you feel that Solari is going to be acting more as a caretaker? Do you feel that he is really trying to get and keep this job? And if he is, what kind of comparisons are made to Zinedine Zidane, who kind of came through the same path that Solari is going through right now?
My immediate reaction is I think he is going to try and work to keep this job and not just be the caretaker. I mean, you have lots of different news outlets throwing out different names. A big one was Conte, but that could supposedly cause issues with a couple of the players. I think the attitude and the personality and even the playing style that Solari has works well with the team. You can see, even just like you said, it's only been one game, but the change in the team's dynamic was drastic. Mm-hmm. They were hungrier. They're looking for the attack. They're playing out wide and just trying to get the ball into the back of the net. In comparison to Zidane, I think it's just relatively the same. I know a lot of people on Twitter are talking about the black magic, so to speak, that Zidane had. So even when games weren't going his way, they still ended up in favor of Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. And some people were comparing that to Solari's first game because Vinicius' shot was a deflection and then the penalty, of course, for Ramos. But in the end, I think the Frenchman and the Argentine have the same mentality and know what they want to bring to this squad, and they really just show that they have a vision, so they can both obviously put it into place, and if it turns out right, then I think Solari could definitely be the one to keep the job.
Now, when we look back on this, on the job that Solari's done, when we're at the end of May and we look back on the season, what type of season do we have to see from Real Madrid where we say, yeah, he's definitely worth keeping around? What's the bar that Solari has to get over to maintain that job?
I think the big one and probably the most obvious one is he has to find the goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the absence of Cristiano Ronaldo, that's just massive. You're talking about around 450 goals that just disappeared. And as decisive as a player as he was, the entire team at Real Madrid is just as talented as he is. So they have the ability, and if Solari can find the player that can make the difference and be put into the absence of that CR7 slot, and that will definitely help the team mentally and then also just make the end results better and hopefully bring them up in the table, because that goal drought was just disastrous for the team.
No doubt
so
about
getting
it.
Over that hump would be extremely big.
Sure, absolutely. Emily, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us tonight. We definitely enjoyed it, and we look forward to having you back again sometime soon.
Yes, thank you again. I hope you enjoyed it. I did as well. And yes, thank you.
Awesome. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
And that was Emily Wilson from Marca and the Short Pass as well. Great to catch up with her and have her on the show. Rob, let's go pay some bills and let's get our promo in here for On It. On It is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, On It combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you are climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room, or running a marathon, On It is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, On It refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, On It's diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting www.onit.com and using promo code BEYOND. That is www.onit.com and using promo code BEYOND to save up to 10%. And that's, make sure you guys get over to On It and do that. So moving forward, Rob, let's hit our topics of the week this week. And the first big one that I had hinted to in the opening monologue is the return of Lionel Messi. He is currently set to come back to the side as Barcelona square off against Internazionale in basically the second leg as we go through the second round of matches here in the Champions League. Right now, I think many places are placing it kind of at as a 50-50 thing where he's practicing with the team, but it is not certain that he's going to be back on the pitch. And even Ernesto Valverde has said that they've asked him about it, and he said, you know, well, we would be better with him out there. So I don't know that they're going to run him back out there. I think they'll probably be a little more cautious. But what are your thoughts of Messi getting back in this week, and do they even need to get him back in?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I wouldn't put the risk in what seems to be a set Champions League group. I think for them, that I think they've already done enough in the first three games to get them past the stage of going into the round of 16. I think they've done enough regarding that. So if I was Ernesto Valverde, I wouldn't play him at all. I would save him up for me on a personal level, at least until after the international break.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Just a couple of weeks.
Just because, you know, and Joe, obviously you know this better than I do, just how sensitive the injury has been so far as well.
Sure. I mean, you know, coming back from a broken arm, you know, I get it. He doesn't play with his arm, but falling on that, I mean, obviously very painful, even just running with it. And, you know, to only come back in a couple of weeks, I think is a little too soon. And I think the best thing, like you'd said, you know, right now they're currently in first place in La Liga. They've pretty much locked up Group B. It'll be a formality this week if they get the result against Inter. You know, they pull another 3 points against Inter, then that'll be all said and done. So, you know, it'll be a done deal. I don't see why they would bring him back. And I think, Rob, like you said, the next international break, I think, is a perfect spot. You skip this weekend. He gets another 2 weeks off. He's probably not going to go play for Argentina in these next round of friendlies. So you bring him back, he gets another 3 or 4 weeks of rest. I think it's a perfect spot, Rob, is to come back after the international break. So we'll see if Valverde and the Argentinian national team both do that, which I think they will, and they'll move on from there. So
Messi has not been called up to the national team.
So there you go. So he's definitely getting that time off. So I mean, yeah, no reason to play him. And I don't even know who they have this weekend, Rob. I didn't go and look that deep into La Liga's schedule to see who they were playing.
They played Betis on Sunday, but after that, on the 24th, they take on Atletico Madrid.
Well, that's going to be after the international break. So,
yep.
Perfect time to bring him back after a big game like that. Atleti, obviously, still within striking distance, only 4 points back of Barca at the moment. So I think that is the right spot to bring him back and have him full, and not truly have him full strength and not suffer a setback where you're going to lose him for that match. Right.
Right.
So I agree. Let's go. I know we interjected here Inter Milan into this conversation slightly. Let's go to the other side. Some breaking news earlier today we've heard this rumblings before of Gennaro Gattuso possibly being let go at AC Milan. Milan kind of looking to make that next step in the progression of their project here. But the name being thrown around, Arsene Wenger, I can't wrap my head around, just strictly because of what happened recently, you know, with the way things ended for him at Arsenal the past 3 or 4 years. I've also read articles that I understand where, you know, Wenger brings all this experience. He brings, you know, he's a little bit more pragmatic, a little more conservative, and I think would be somebody that might nurture this team. It's kind of like the slow, steady pace to get back into relevance. But Gattuso's got them in a spot now where they are currently, I believe, fourth in the Serie A.
That's right.
He's in Champions League spots. I mean, and I think they're competing well in the Europa League right now. I didn't go back and look and see their position at the moment. But, you know, does this make sense to you?
No, 100% no. That does not make sense. And just looking back real quick into the group stage in the Europa League, if I can just double check right here. I mean, yeah, I mean, certainly it doesn't really make any sense for them to get rid of Gattuso so early on, just because of the potential that he has at this job over there. And currently on 6 points, you know, 2 wins and just 1 draw. So they're clearly in striking distance to qualify to the knockout stage. Obviously, have to look out for Olympiacos, who have 4 points behind them. But certainly, I mean, if I'm the top brass in Milan, I definitely would not get rid of Gattuso. So I think they're in a good position right now. You know, you're looking at a player like Gonzalo Higuain, who is really on fine form at the moment. I think certainly it's just a sense of, you know, trying to create more rumors. I mean, they've only lost, Joe, I don't know if you know this, but they've only lost 2 games this season, right? And they only lost it to Napoli and Inter, who, you know, to be fair, would expect them to lose to those teams because of how strong they are. But, you know, they've won the majority of their games. I mean, you know, 6 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses, 21 points, 4 behind. Second place Inter, actually. So they're still in striking distance for a Champions League spot. So for me, I think it's just more about creating much more rumors. I don't think Wenger even is the right person to replace Gattuso if he was to get sacked in the first place. So if I'm the top brass in Milan, I would keep Gattuso at the moment.
Yeah.
I would definitely not sack him at any stretch of imagination.
I completely agree. And that loss to Inter, you've got to remember, was in stoppage time, 1-0.
That's right.
You know, so it's not something that... Yeah, and really, when you look at it, it was kind of a mistake on Donnarumma when he gives up that goal. I agree. I think he's done a great job. You know, he doesn't have the experience that Wenger has. I get it. But he's, you know, he's a guy that bleeds Rossonero, right? I mean, he is AC Milan.
Well, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And certainly he hasn't been broke yet. But it's certainly something that's happening.
I agree. I agree completely. And we'll have to see if they do actually, right now, this is a strictly rumor, but it's a rumor that's carried some weight at the moment. So we'll have to see where it goes from here. But I don't like the move if they go bring Wenger. I mean, I know the greatness that Arsene Wenger was, right? But I don't think, I think the game has passed him by. And this is not the first time I've said this. I've said this years ago when he was still at the helm at Arsenal. You know, so I think the game is passing by to an extent, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, when you were in the game 30, 40 years, the game will pass you by. That's natural. So, I'm not poo-pooing the guy. I'm just saying that I think that from this standpoint, this is probably not the way AC Milan want to go and look. Although I guess you could do worse, right? I mean, look at Chievo. They brought Ventura on, and that's been a, you know, they went from being a dumpster fire to a train wreck in a dumpster fire with Chievo Verona. Definitely. There. So that's just been something crazy. But we'll see if that takes place. And, you know, a good person to speak to this on, because I guess we can kind of hint at this. Next week, we're going to have Mr. Matt Santangelo coming on, right?
That's right.
And big Rossonero guy, and I feel bad because we can't get together this weekend. One of the plans was to get together this weekend to see the match, because it's Juve AC Milan. We're not going to get a chance to do that, but you know, definitely want to talk to Matt about this, because I think he's going to have some great insight, you know, as a fan and as a journalist, if this does take place. So we'll leave that one for next week. Rob, last topic we want to talk about tonight is the MLS playoffs. Obviously last week with our old friend Sir Bob, we previewed the MLS playoffs. We've already seen some surprises, right? Let's start out first. We talked about DC United and how well they were playing. We thought that they would knock off the Columbus Crew, but you know, there's no more Wayne Rooney in this tournament, right?
No, nope.
They've been sent packing. Columbus gets the result against DC United, and now not only that, they've taken the first leg against the New York Red Bull at home. You know, just amazing to see that turnaround for the Columbus Crew. This is a team a few months ago, remember, was leaving, right? Going to Austin. Here we are. Now we're 90 minutes away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, we'll look at some of the other matchups. And, of course, though, the other key of the Eastern Conference here, which you were able to witness firsthand yesterday with Atlanta and NYCFC. I want to throw it over to you and get your thoughts on that match.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was at the game, as you mentioned, Joe, at Yankee Stadium between Atlanta United and NYCFC. The first game for Miguel Marin, who for me, I mean, I was surprised to see him start. I was convinced that he was probably going to play the second half. And you kind of felt that they needed to, just because of the energy that they needed in the second half. Joe, we both watched this game as a whole. I mean, certainly it was really, you know, aggressive, you know, not a lot of actual football coming along. You don't see too much of the creativity from NYCFC, and I felt that had Alan Marone probably played in the second half, you know, bring that kind of speed to the team and you know, just run circles around them, that lack of midfield that NYCFC has, that would have probably been much more of a suited result instead of a 1-0 result, or at least, you know, sorry, let me go back and state again. I think the game would have probably been much more in factor of Atlanta, where they could have scored one or two goals. But let me ask you this, Joe. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I mean, the first goal, the first offside goal, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I was surprised the referee did not whistle it sooner. And that was, I want to refresh my memory, that was Almiron playing the ball in
Almiron,
on the corner.
That's right.
Right. So what happens is when, and this happens all the time, and especially this is, I put this on Almiron as well. You've got to know what's going on, right? If he looks up at the before he takes that kick, if he looks up, he sees nobody's on the post. So the minute he plays that ball, he's offsides, right?
Right.
So when the ball is stopped and he comes and runs onto it, you're running from an offsides position. I'm surprised the referees missed that. Okay? I mean, that was an easy call. When it happened, I was like, you never see it happen that way. So how did they manage to get that kickoff? You know, and then at the same time, you got to put some blame on Almiron because he kind of, in a sense, switched off, right? I mean, not knowing what's going on in the play, kind of switches off and runs in from an offside position. I think it's the right call, completely the right call, you know, at the end of it all. But I just, it was a weird play the way it happened. And I actually, watching the match, I kind of paused and said, wait a minute, how did that happen? You know, so it was a weird one for me. But obviously, Atlanta United got it back afterwards.
Definitely, and certainly, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this leg, and especially the one in Columbus as well, between the Red Bull, is far from over. Despite the fact that, you know, Atlanta will be going at home at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and the Red Bulls are playing at home as well. I mean, but both these legs being at 1-0 is far from over.
Sure.
Even in the situations that both the teams are in.
Absolutely. Both, you know, the teams that are on the pitch are definitely talented to come back. It's funny, I mean, obviously, NYCFC is in way better shape. I'm sorry, way worse shape than the New York Red Bull. New York Red Bull conceding a goal on the road is one thing. NYCFC conceding a goal at home is a much different story. And I think, you know, one of the other things is that NYCFC has been so successful at home this year that, and you saw it, Rob, we talked about it, you know, yesterday. The match played a little chippy. It played a little spotty. Yep. And I think part of that is because of the size of the pitch. And now that you're going to move to Atlanta, you're going to move to 70,000 people. You're going to move to a full size pitch. Weather won't be an option. It won't be cold. I think they're in a very, very difficult spot compared to the Red Bull, who are going to come home against the Columbus Crew and a team as talented as that. They really had an off night when you look back on the match. And I think the Red Bull are certainly in a much better position to overturn this. I think the one that's really funny is Real Salt Lake Sporting KC. That one's going back to Kansas City 1-1. And the Timber, obviously, with the Cascadia Derby there, you know, Timber 2-1 over the Seattle Sounders going to Seattle for the second leg. I'm going to leave it to you, Rob, to give us the times and of these matches for the second legs. But Timber has got to be real happy under Gio Savarese right now that they're in this position where they can kind of lock it down and move on.
Definitely. And on Thursday, we will have the second leg of that match at 10:30 p.m. So get some rest beforehand if you want to stay up and watch this game. On Sunday, we have three big games. We have Atlanta United taking on NYCFC over there at Mercedes. We have the Red Bull taking on Columbus Crew at the same time, Joe, if I'm reading that correctly.
Yeah, you know, I actually...
All three games are at the same time.
Yeah, you know what? That was the way it was reported a couple of days ago, but I'm looking at it now. Obviously, you said Seattle Sounders 10:30 on Thursday. On Sunday, Sporting KC will be the second match at 3 o'clock, Atlanta United NYCFC at 5, and Red Bull Columbus Crew at 7:30 on Sunday.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Those matches when we punch up the show plan did not have times labeled other than those 4 o'clock times. So now we're staggered again.
Yep.
All right. And then we've got other matches. I mean, it doesn't end in the United States, right? As self-centered as we like to be here in the United States, it doesn't end there, right?
No, it does not. And obviously we'll save has to be the biggest game of the weekend. That's not even in Europe. Well, we'll save that for last, obviously. Yeah. But the matches to watch this week, we have in the Champions League, we have Inter and Barcelona taking on each other Tuesday at 3 p.m. At the same time, we have Napoli against PSG. Edinson Cavani returning back to his old stomping grounds. Mm-hmm. Atletico against Dortmund at Tuesday at 3 p.m. as well. And on Wednesday, we have Juventus taking on Manchester United. Another Ronaldo homecoming. It will be at the Jay Stadium, though. That could give the advantage to Juventus to qualify firmly, correctly to the next round. In the Europa League, we have two interesting matches. We have Lazio taking on Marseille at 12:55 p.m. And we have Arsenal taking on Sporting at 3 p.m. In league action, we have Dortmund against Bayern in Der Klassik. We have that game Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Can Dortmund actually – and Joe, I mean, this has to be the biggest Der Klassik in a long time because of the position that both the teams are in at the moment.
Absolutely. You know, right now, Bayern are the ones on the back foot, and Dortmund holding solid in first place in the Bundesliga. Kind of, you know, you'd said it perfectly the other day, changing of the guard is kind of what we're seeing right now. And, this is a huge one. Dortmund takes this one. I think they go 5 or 6 points clear of Bayern Munich. And between the bragging rights, it's just a massive match.
Yeah, I'm just going to double check real quick. At the moment, Dortmund is at 24, Bayern is at 20. So, yeah, they could definitely go and extend themselves to 7 points clear over their big rivals. And, you know, that doesn't really happen so much in the Bundesliga. That's usually accustomed to Bayern Munich, but to Borussia Dortmund. And mind you, there's another team that is also right ahead of Bayern Munich, and that's Borussia Mönchengladbach, Joe.
Yeah, they had another great match on the weekend as well. So the Bayern's in a little bit of trouble here, and you wonder, we've talked about these coaches, you know, we talked about Mourinho, we talked about Lopetegui at the time, and Niko Kovac right now, he's got to be next up on the list, right?
It's got to be, and certainly if they don't get a result here, I mean, certainly there will be some type of discussions, and that seat will definitely get much more hotter for Niko Kovac. Heading into the future. But having said that, we have the Manchester City Derby. By the way, the Manchester Derby on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Manchester City taking on Manchester United. I mean, certainly, it's a weird one, this one, is it? Because you would think that would be much more competitive. But after seeing what Manchester City put, what six over Southampton over the weekend?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's just, I mean, no one can stop
this. I gotta tell you, Rob, for some reason, this match screams City over United, like, 3-0, right? It screams that. I'm going to take United to win this because this is one of those stupid games that something happens, a ball bounces, and before you know it, De Gea makes a huge save, they break out, Martial scores, and everybody's crying. So for some reason, this should go Man City's way. I just feel like it's one of those matches that has one of those weird feelings, and I wouldn't be surprised if United wins.
City currently 9 points ahead of Manchester United, who are in seventh. If they do that, they go up to 12 points ahead. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, that could happen. You never know. Mm-hmm. In La Liga, not as much as interesting game, but we do have two teams that are actually competing within the top standings in La Liga. No, it's not Real Madrid. No, it's not even it's not even Atletico Madrid, Joe. It's Espanyol and Sevilla. Both these teams are separated by just 1 point, with them being separated by 4 respectively and 3 respectively to top-tier Barcelona. I mean, who would have thought that Espanyol and Sevilla would be fighting it out for a Champions League spot?
You know, Sevilla, you almost expect that they're one of those teams that is talented enough to be in this position. I think the Espanyol one is the surprise here. And not saying that they're a bad team. They're a solid team. But I just think that the Sevilla team's a little more talented. But to see these two teams this high up on the totem pole still this late, you know, this late in the season, we're a quarter of the way through, right, is just a testament to the seasons that both teams have been having. And they're still within striking distance of Barca.
That's right. In Serie A, we have a big one that obviously you just mentioned a couple minutes ago. We have Juventus taking on AC Milan Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Certainly one of those, and Joe, I mean, maybe this could be one of these other matches where, you know, Juventus, you would think, could clearly win this one. They have an exceptional record over there at the Jay Stadium, but given the fact that Milan has been quite sort of well, at least this season, you know, they're on top four, I mean, certainly Milan can get a good result in this one.
Yeah, oh, definitely. This is not a match that the Juventus brass should overlook, and still coming into this injured, you know, Mandzukic has still been knocked, is carrying a knock, Douglas Costa. Let me see, Mandzukic, Costa, Sammy Khedira, I believe Giorgio Chiellini also, they're all coming back. There's quite a few injuries spread out amongst the Juventus side. This is going to be a match that where AC Milan is talented enough to really test the depth that Juventus has with Champions League, with Serie A, with all of it. This is going to be a tough one.
Definitely. And in Ligue 1, we have probably the most unbalanced game, big game of the weekend. Monaco against PSG Sunday at 3 p.m. PSG are currently with 36 points, top of Ligue 1, haven't lost a game yet. They're 12-0-0. They're perfect so far, one of the few perfect teams so far in Europe this season. Monaco are 19th with 7 points, deep into the relegation zone. They're only 3 points off the relegation playoff, but it's certainly not been going well for Thierry Henry so far, Joe.
No, and with reports coming out of France today that Thierry Henry feels the players are kind of mailing it in and not providing, you know, not giving their hardest effort, you wonder how long Thierry Henry will last there. And was this a good fit for him, especially when you've got a disgruntled team that he's supposedly not able to rein in and get them playing the way he wants yet?
Definitely. And, of course, the big game. No, it's not in Europe. No, it's not even in North America. It's all the way in South America and Argentina. As we had mentioned early on in the show, and obviously we'll mention this in the trivia answer as well, Boca River Plate for the first time ever in a Copa Libertadores final, the first leg at La Bombonera. They're not playing midweek. They will be playing on Saturday at 2 p.m. at La Bombonera. No visiting fans. Certainly the biggest game to watch for, Joe.
Yeah, this is definitely the match of the week, no doubt about it. I mean, with all due respect to the Clásico and the Manchester Derby, you know, and the Monaco PSG match, which always brings some venom. This is one of those. I think right now the Barca Real Madrid Clásico would probably be the only one that would be close to the venom that we're going to see in this. I mean, they're burning each other's houses down, Rob. That's probably, you know, there's a little bit of passion in this one. And remember, it's over two legs. So we're going to get to talk about this one, you know, match number one on Saturday at 2 p.m. And then I believe they play the following weekend as well. And again, like I had mentioned earlier in the show, we're going to have a special show coming out with Pete Coates. We're going to do that on Thursday and release that out to you guys. So you'll get your own preview of Copa Libertadores final. The last one that'll be played over two legs, and I can't wait to do that as well. It's going to be one hell of a match to watch.
Definitely.
So those are our matches of the week, Rob. I know we've got a trivia question that I've got to get answered here, so you want to give it back to the fans again?
Absolutely. So the Boca River final will be the third ever continental final to be contested around the world between each confederation for a major title that come from the same city. Can you name the only other game that has happened on two occasions from two teams from the same country and the same city to compete for a top continental title?
Most recently, this match happened, I believe, 2 years ago, if I remember correctly. Maybe three. No, 3 years ago. 3 years ago, this match happened. It is the Madrid Derby. right?
It was 2 years ago, and yes, it is the Madrid Derby.
Yep, Atleti and Real Madrid, and they've
happened in 2014 as well, where Real Madrid both came as victors.
Yep, exactly. So, but that's a great question. And you would think, you know, with AC Milan, Inter Milan, the two teams have been so successful over the years. You know, City has not reached a Champions League final yet, but that would be one that you would suspect could equal this feat. You know, the history behind Torino with Juve, that would be one that you think might be able to sneak in as well. But, it's the Madrid Derby.
Milan
to start. Yeah, you know, you look at the early 2000s, you got to remember Mourinho won the treble with Inter Milan. We know all the AC Milan history that they have, so you would expect that team to be there. But, no, Madrid twice is the way it's gone. So.
I have to tell you, Joe, is this the biggest game involving two teams from the same city in the world?
Boca River?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no doubt. So Rob, without anything left on the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. And there we go. So for episode 223 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Emily Wilson from Marco for joining us tonight. Next week we have Matt Santangelo coming on to join us, and again, keep an eye out midweek for our Copa Libertadores special preview show with Pete Coates. So, for episode 223 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and good night.